Hello, everybody. Today is August 13th, 2013, and this is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com. And our regularly scheduled individual that we were going to be interviewing today was very ill, unfortunately, so we had to kind of juggle some things around at the last minute. So I have with me Martin Ellis, and I know you guys have heard him interviewed by me before. But today we have some very kind of interesting, deeper, soulful conversations to discuss and how that applies and fits in with CE5 training. One of the reasons that I agreed to work with Martin is because he really takes the whole CE5 concept and connecting with our galactic brothers and sisters to a whole nother scale and level, coming from a very spiritual perspective. And so I wanted to ask him some kind of deeper thinking questions. Hello, Martin. How are you?
Hello, Alex. Very well. Thank you so much for interviewing me again.
You are welcome. And thank you for coming in at the last minute. This was really, I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So I was thinking, I was contemplating, and actually, I was doing a lot of that, as you know, throughout my 3-week mission across the U.S., and thinking in terms of how CE5 training is not outside ourselves, and we tend to think of it as, oh wow, there's those galactic beings up in those spaceships flying around, waving their hand, saying hi, how you doing?
Sure.
And I realize that this just goes so much deeper into the whole conscious involvement of merging with them. Could you talk a little bit about that and how the training would assist us in being able to truly merge with our star families?
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, there are two perspectives. One is that they're out there, and the other perspective is they're right here. So the perspective that they're out there means that there is distance and there is space and there is a reaching out, if you will. So there is a position where one person is here and our galactic friends are over there or far out there. Okay, so that's working with time and space. Now the other perspective, which is something I'm very keen to further explore, is that there is no outside, there is no over there, there is only inside. So from that view, there is no need to reach out as such, because they're not out there, they're actually right here, existing in consciousness. From that perspective, there's nowhere to go, and the interconnectivity is absolutely seamless. So there is no drawing in. And there's no coherent thought sequencing, which is a CE5 protocol whereby you're cohering your thoughts to the point where you're drawing in and making contact. In fact, they're already there. So from the view that they're already here, already in consciousness, the idea of arriving at the site and then drawing them forwards to make that interconnectivity has already occurred. And in fact, that's why I put out a pre-CE5 to try and elucidate that view that they're here, already here, and they're already there waiting. So just to, it's an existential perspective here whereby I'm looking at a computer, but in fact, all there is just photons, is just light particles. And so what's happening at the back of my brain is that it's cohering it into shape, form, distance, texture, in fact, sound, all the senses. And so it's all happening in the back of my brain. And so the idea that there's some outside is incorrect in that perspective. So the interconnectivity is there. It's right on the tip of your nose. And one does not necessarily enter into a enter towards a unity mode of meditation. Simply because through acknowledging that there is no outside and that they're already here, contact is there instantly.
Wow.
So so there's two views. Is one is that they're out there, and the other one is that they're in here.
Wow, and you're really changing the whole construct of even the space and time perception.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in that sense, you've done away with space and time.
Right. And so, you speak a lot about cohering. And I would imagine that when you're working with the brainwave coherence that comes about from this sort of training, you're fully integrating, cohering with all the different levels of the conscious, the subconscious, the superconscious. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, let's take it step by step. So, first of all, when we get together at the training, it's very, very important to, yes, merge individually, but also as a group. So there's group cohering. So we need to look at two things. Group cohering is where we try to blend and merge with each other and work collectively as a group. That's a challenge for me as a course instructor. But of course, to emerge individually through quiet mind exercises is also a challenge for people to level with. So basically, we have to get to a place in space where thought is virtually diminishing. It's very difficult, I understand that. And as one drops, it's like a lift. As you're dropping down, a number of things occur. Is that your electromagnetic field in the old vernacular aura begins to soften. And as it begins to soften, it begins to move out. It doesn't move out 10 feet, 20 feet. It can move out several miles, in fact, even further. And once it's doing this, it's now also beginning to merge and connect with the planetary dynamics as well. So we're a part of Gaia. We have that structure within our DNA. And so we're beginning to merge with Gaia. And of course, by that stage, we're hopefully merging with each other. If anybody else is there puddling out, I call it puddling out, where the dewdrop sort of becomes, trying to become the shining sea, is everybody starts to cohere and work collectively at that point. So naturally, the person that is going into that quiet state mind, beginning to move out electromagnetically, are now not concerned about dimensions. They're not concerned about whether they're going into a deeper subconscious or superconscious, because simply there is very little thought. So there's very little reflection. There is some reflection, but the idea there is to get beyond reflection. And then, of course, we're beginning to phase into the fifth and sixth and beyond dimensions. This takes practice, naturally so. But getting into a place where thought is reducing itself down is an indication that time is beginning to flatline.
Mm, interesting.
Okay. Yeah. And so, there is a method of focusing as well, where, for example, I'll give each person an incense and cut it off to an inch. And there's two things, really. There, you hold it with your hands pressed together in the prayer position, with it lit and pointing up, if you like, by an inch. And the idea there is to take your mind off the fact that, the incense is lit, but it represents, say, for example, half an hour. And as it goes down, it gets warmer and warmer and warmer. So that's the end of your meditation, if you like, and put it out. So you're also testing how the mind can try to still itself in an extreme condition where your fingers are now getting hot.
Mm.
And it's an interesting point here that I've had people who are able to allow that incense to go through their fingers, and their fingers will naturally put it out and they won't feel burnt.
So you're like disconnecting yourself from the physical body almost.
In that sense, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit like walking on hot coals, except it's the incense dropping down into your fingers and all that naturally go out without any pain. And so there's two things there. One, well, three. There's one is it sets for a half an hour meditation. Two, you've got to try and get to the mind not distracted by the heat. And three, the measure of that non-distraction is when the incense goes out and you don't feel excruciating burning pain. It just goes out. And so there is an element of control there, a mental control through not attaching to the exercise. If you, as soon as you attach to it, like all things, you know, suffering comes. So that's an exercise in terms of quieting the mind and also seeing how it will, you know, disturb yourself while you're doing the exercise.
So detachment, as we know, I mean, anyone who's on this path knows that detaching from your external stimuli and things like that is very essential and becoming, you know, expanding your ability to become one with that which is actually causing the external vibration and stimulation. But
is
that also the same for like the disillusion of the ego? You know, how does the ego play into all of this? Do you actually, because I know we need to get out of the way of the ego.
Yeah. Bless the ego. I mean, where would we be without the ego?
no kidding.
You know, and it has, let's face it, thumbs up to the ego in the sense that it's a very much an integral part of the human experience and it's necessary. It's part of the fabric and makeup of being. Well, the other view is, apart from detachment, is non-attachment. Of course, is where non-attachment is you're not attaching yourself to the importance of personality. You don't take yourself seriously, you know, so you don't attach yourself to menial, insignificant things that you find when you're younger important. You know, a little bit of age plays out there. Where, you know, you get to a place in space where being non-attached means less suffering because more attachment, and this is very Buddhist philosophy coming through here. So not non-attachment in terms of ego, you're allowing the ego to dissolve somewhat, but it'll always be there. It'll always, you know, it'll always come back and say, hey, you know, you know, I'm somebody, you know, I have a place in space, you know,
right.
And hang on a minute, can you give me a bit of time? And so while we're experiencing, you know, the world, you know, the ego will be there. The important thing is to, I would suggest, is certainly don't take yourself too seriously. And then you're disabling a part of the ego that wants to be taken seriously and make itself important.
Yeah.
So in terms of the training, you know, relaxing the ego comes through the meditation exercises.
Well, now on another side note here, I think a lot of us look at wanting to connect with our galactic brothers and sisters as something that's kind of a one-way street. I mean, we're so, I don't know how many of us say this, if not once, you know, twice, that we're so ready to get into the 5D. We're so ready to be done with this job here, you know, of surviving within the 3D world. But with that said, how does this training assist one in recognizing that, you know, they want the contact with us as much as we want it with them? And the way in which they're working on multiple levels of beingness with us.
Yeah. Okay. Can you run that past me, just the last part again? Because I was just going to answer that. Just the last half part. If you can bring
just
that back.
How do they work with us on this multiple level of beingness? You know, we are basically looking into the stars. We're saying to ourselves, man, I want to have my consciousness expanded. I want to have my gifts back. I want to remember who I am. I mean, if I haven't heard that once, I've heard it 50 times. How many conversations do all of us have saying this over and over and over again? So we're looking to the stars. We're wishing for that. And it's very kind of one-sided, you know? So do you get where I'm going with this?
There is, in a sense, no start date or start time because it's continuum, it's continuous. So that shifting, that movement towards more wakefulness, the movement towards having your consciousness open sufficient to be able to embrace and begin to procure a relationship with our star families is an ongoing process. I mean, I understand with a lot of the shifting changes we're seeing at the moment. You know, the old patterns are now being done away with, and we're moving into a more new, higher frequency states. And so that will help too. Okay, some people are clairaudient and they will get voice coming through and they will hear it. And others are very sensitive to be guided internally in the old vernacular, you know, this is being guided by spirit, if you will, an old spiritualist term. It takes me back a few years. And so you will ask. I mean, you can ask, please ask, you know, to develop a relationship, a clearer relationship, to recall and remember. Let's face it, it has to begin with oneself putting that out. And then, of course, asking to be taught and whatever it is that you're drawn to want to know. And when you're ready, it will occur. So, for example, let's say nighttime, you know, dream state, as we know, that's a very convenient mode in which we can make connection, particularly on the astral level as well, and consciously too at the astral level. And so how do we know that we're moving and shifting in the direction to which we are wanting to make that firm relationship that's a benefit to our progression? Well, I mean, there's no hard and fast answers to this. Essentially, you will begin to shift, say, for example, away from cigarettes. You might shift away from alcohol. You might shift away from certain foods. You may begin to be drawn to more water. You know, look for these signs that are indicative of merging and blending and being in touch with our greater inspirers, if you will. And so there are these physical manifestations that are occurring. And you may actually get downloads, information. I think we covered this before, where you get these parcels of information that suddenly flower and you get answers to old questions and concepts. It's rather like a veil slowly thinning and you get to pierce on the other side. Now, of course, what's occurring here naturally is that your electromagnetic field frequency is increasing and we're having to try to parody and match, you know, so on the more lower end of the spectrum of our celestial ET friends. But the more we're able to raise that frequency level, the more we're able to blend, strengthen that relationship, and the more the obvious changes will be apparent to us. It may also be we occasionally get our hearts, get this flutter, and we want to be out in nature. We want to be more calm. We want to shift our busy lives around. We get fed up with doing the old job, you know. We were looking for shifts and changes. So all these are aspects of people who are listening to this radio show who are drawn to ET special contact will be aware of, and those that are coming to awareness of that will make notes of what I've just mentioned. And all this comes from asking, you know, seek, and you'll find, put it out there.
Yes.
And it will happen.
Yes. And especially now, we really are moving into a period of much more manifestation if we can just get out of the way of our constructs, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the constructs, the old forest, you know, we plant seeds in our, for example, how you say, we have the program within programming programs, and we run with these programs and we think we're coming up with a new innovative system. But in fact, these are old programs. And the idea is to trying to navigate away from these old programs. And so, you know, we have a forest. We plant seeds and we're busily doing stuff. And as soon as we make a clearing, we have a void. We infill it with more things to do, you see.
Right. And these programs are not even necessarily our programs.
Well, that's another risk, and that's another conversation again, isn't it, with regards to the DNA, you know, and the information triggering off in ourselves, and that, well, you know, perhaps it may well be, an unconscious, at a very deep level, guilt may actually be something that's been passed on through a generation prior, and it's coming through now, and those have to come up and be cleared as well.
Yes, I deal a lot with that with the essences.
Right.
See a lot of that, you know, the miasmic influences and the timeline influences that are being brought into this lifetime especially. So, yes, it's definitely affecting us. So, you know, getting back to perceiving with the mind. You know, basically your training is assisting people in perceiving with their mind without the need of using their senses, right? So
yes and no. For example, all the above, you know, our senses are there and we can, you know, for example, we're looking through our eyes, you know, we're out in the evening under a beautiful canvas lit starlight sky, and we begin to sense our galactic friends around us, and that may manifest in a number of ways, but we're also connecting with our eyes too. So there may be some biofeedback, like you may see a craft, and instantly you get a sense of knowingness. And that knowingness triggers off a number of other feelings, and off you go. Your CU5 is occurring, and something is beginning to flower. So in that sense, your eyes were very important. Yet at the same time, you could close your eyes and get out your senses, if you like, get out of your head, if you will, and begin to sense internally. We have a natural internal technology, and so sometimes the senses can get in the way, and so getting to a quiet mind meditation state, maybe closed eyes, you know, you're removing any sensory disturbances and reducing your thoughts, and then you go internal, and that's the intrapersonal side that I'm wanting to focus on in the trainings. And I'll be doing a lot of, hopefully, you know, one-on-one with people too during the day.
Yeah, and that's what I was so impressed, is that you're so committed to meeting people where they are. In fact, one of the questions that's come up with the attendants that have already signed up is, you know, hey, I'm not a real big advocate, or I'm not really big into meditation. I reach it another way. What would your response be to that?
Well, absolutely. First of all, my remit is one of, I hope, in a modest way, is to serve.
Right. And really,
on the walk and talk in that scenario, they would lead the direction of where I would direct. It's wonderful to see, you know, and empirically record and see our star family there, you know, and it's quite, you know, it can be very mind-blowing, produce a paradigm shift. Well, okay, fine. However, in the meantime, there's much to be done internally with the person who's making, you know, wanting to make that shift and change towards a more peaceable, sensitive, non-prejudicial, a more rounded personality and person. One has to work on that level, where they are. And it's a matter of step-by-step listening and taking them to where you feel that they want to go. On the walk and talk, if you will, on the one-on-one, it moves a long way away from things like exopolitics and disclosure and, you know, and energy systems and free energy and so forth. That's not where we are. We're at it on a serpent train.
Right. And the conspiracy theory.
And the conspiracy theories. Yeah. I mean, we can go there, fine, but I really want to steer back to the person. And that's where the one-on-one is unique in terms of the SERPA CFI ambassador training, because people really do need to have time with the director to, they have a lot, they have internal concerns, they want answers, and sometimes it's not difficult to deliver those answers, but it's also being there to listen, you know, as well.
Well, so, you know what, Martin, tell people about who you trained with again, because I thought that was so fascinating. Maybe give us some insight into all of those years of training. I never say his name correctly. What is his name again?
It can come across as a little bit funny. Ratu Bagus.
Okay, I knew I was going to obliterate that. Ratu Bagus. Okay. And
Well, yeah. I mean, before I go into that relationship, for me, I previously had a strong training, excuse me, in sport, and so there was a lot of kind of focus and energy there, and that was very much a passion, a direction I was taking.
good point.
And so I think that probably had a good effect in terms of disciplining the the personality into a focusing more. And so with Ratu, is a wonderful, amazing, incredible energy master. Shaman is seen as a god in Indonesia, and the Indonesian government frequently ask him over to provide talks and trainings on energy with the police force and so forth.
So
He is highly respected
I was
in
going to say, you
Indonesia.
said he's highly respected and also highly sought out. Is he considered to be one of, like their main master teachers walking the planet at this time?
Well, absolutely. I mean, in terms of energy training, he is tops. There's nobody. There's no. I mean, you get Qigong, you get Qigong energy masters. But quite frankly, when you're before Ratu, and he delivers, golden ribbons of light that process you,
Wow.
he is. You could have on. There's a YouTube, wonderful YouTube. Excerpt. In fact, I was there only a few weeks earlier, and the old Taman in the ashram, is called God's Garden or God's Place. And you'll have people, you have 20, 30 people pushing up against each other, pushing a door closed. Okay. And so you're all pushing each other's backs, and you're lining up, and you're holding this door closed. And then, of course, Ratu is on the other side. He just gently walks towards the door. And all of a sudden, everybody bursts back because you can't cope with the energy field that he's bringing with him to the door.
Wow, isn't
And he
that?
just opens it gently, and everybody's flat out on the floor. And this is seen on the YouTube video,
Wow.
he understands energies exceedingly well, and he's been described as the ultimate spiritual warrior in terms of the Brahmin tradition here, in terms of power animals, and power animals coming out of his chest, his knees, his elbows.
Oh my gosh.
He's incredible. And
It sounds a lot like you hear the stories of Christ when he would walk amongst people, and they only had to be within they could be within a mile of him and be healed because his auric field was so powerful and so established.
absolutely, yeah. And Ratu has that wonderful charismatic electromagnetic field around him, and to be in his orb is a process. It is a process, and you feel heat, and the process begins. And he, as I say, in terms of delivering energy as an energy master, I've heard, and this is not a personal view, from a number of people who have been with a number of Chinese masters in Qigong, and a lot of the practitioners will go to Ratu and feel that energy and go through a healing and clearing process, so they can continue good with their qi training, qi delivery.
That's
So
awesome. It's awesome.
Ratu is now, what is he now? He must be a 62, 63. And he has a huge following now. And I met him when he came. I helped to put on a course over here in the UK, and I connected pretty quickly with him. And in fact, one of the methods I'm going to be teaching,
Kind of like me with you.
yeah, exactly,
Yes.
is that it's that frequency connectivity, and suddenly
Yes.
it's there, and there's no words for it. In fact, you can sit in silence, and you're very comfortable.
Yes.
And so what I did with what happened with Ratu, there is an exercise that I'll be showing people to strengthen their electromagnetic field, which is easy to do. And this is something that just naturally came out of me. I was sitting in a corner, and it's rather like holding your hands out in front of you about 18 inches and pushing the air just gently backwards and forwards, and then moving up to your head, and then around, following the shape, if you like, of the electromagnetic field, and then down into your root area, and then moving up, and continuously done this for about an hour.
Whoa.
And Ratu has suddenly triggered off this need to do so. And I started to see ribbons of golden light. And I remember seeing him stand there. And we just made that instant connection. And so I was invited to go back to the ashram. And I was the first person from the UK to do so. And I think very few Westerners had at that time. And I was privileged to be with him, dining with him, his family, and training as well. And we became exceedingly close. And I'm absolutely honored to be considered a son, a physical son of his.
Wow, that's incredible.
And so he is there always, yeah.
And you trained with him. I mean, you virtually were training with him on and off for about 10 years, right?
Well, yes. And what's important here is that, I mean, when I first met him, I had this terrible mosquito bite and my leg flared up terribly. And I had an immense fever, and I was shivering. I was in all the, sleeping bag and so forth, and in the bed and quivering and shaking. And that evening, Ratu stopped the training, which was unheard of. And he came to my room and put his hand on my head, and it was like ice, and just literally removed the heat from my head.
Wow.
And I think the idea was that you're in the energy, you sleep with the energy, you eat with the energy, and so you're not outside of it. And so there was a great deal of trust in him.
Yes.
That could have turned sad if that trust wasn't there. A lot of people go through a very strong process. Not everybody come out of it. And so I think that's when we forged a very strong link. And so the energy there is actually a spiritual heritage. It's not something that I I learned now. It's like most of us. The story of the Book of You, the Book of Us, you know, there are these stories. And so it came out again in this life. But
Well, sounds awesome. So now with that training, I think one of the things that you mentioned was with that training and the fact that you're unifying the immense amount of interest in the CE5 training, learning about it, learning how to connect properly. What has become, the ultimate fringe benefit for you? Were you already somewhat psychic once you had already done this training? Had it opened up your multidimensional field so much so that you were already communicating with the galactic brothers and sisters? Or
well, in fact, no, that actually happened long before, going back 32 years ago than that happened.
Okay. Okay.
That was as a consequence of a unity experience, where it's described as dewdrop becomes a shining sea. And my gosh, when you're there, you're arrested with it, and it will do what it will do. Once it's done with you, it's done with you.
Yes.
And once you're in it, there is no time, there is no space, there is utter bliss. I suppose if somebody was looking upon you, your eyes would be dilated like dinner plates,
Yes. Yeah.
And you're arrested, and it's difficult to know. So that was a profound, holistic shift of personality. And scared the living daylights out of my mother. She didn't understand what was happening back then. I was 29. Bless her. But half an hour after coming home, I was full of the bliss, and I was just cuddling her, cuddling my dad, But that was absolutely astonishing. And the heat or the height of that sat or substance, as the Hindus call it, the power, lasted for about 18 months. Now, contact began to make itself present and known to me. And so that had lasted a long time. So by the time I reached and met up with Ratu again, that was already in place. What is apparent now is that my spiritual provenance, if you will, with energy, in the past, has come forwards, has come out. So to give you a quick example, I organized a course quite some years ago now it was important that everybody left the course and that I was remaining back and just clearing up, and so the tradition there would be that the person who organizes the course has a responsibility of making sure everybody's gone. And so energetically, it's all clear, done and dusted. So there's a degree of responsibility here. However, this gentleman, he was all of 6'5", a lovely man, he's from Holland, and worked at the embassy over here, was insisting that I go home. I said, no, I can't, I must stay here. And he insisted, he's a tall chap, I'm not exactly small, but I'm not exactly big either. And so in the end, I said, okay, fine, I'll do this, but please, you know, he was just waiting for his wife to pick him up. He had his bags packed. And this is in a an out of the way in the countryside retreat center. It wasn't too big. So anyway, a year later, I'm training back in Bali, and I'm sitting down. We're all sitting around the master, and he says, "Oh, it's because in pidgin English," he said, "Francois, he say Martin go. So Martin go. Francois say that he get worried because energy coming. Ha ha ha." demon, like, because they speak of demons and negative energy, you see.
Right.
So he said, so demon coming and start play with his mind. Ha 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 ha. He's a funny chap. And but now he said, he become worried. Then little person coming. Little person, 2 foot tall. And then all of a sudden, everything go, demon go, Rene, fine now. And he said, you know who person was? So everybody said, no. He said, Martin. So I didn't leave him after all. I was there in the astral as a 2 foot being. And so, you know, and helped to kind of clear them away. And he was greatly thankful for that. But that's when it became apparent to me that this is an ongoing work that I've done in the past.
Yes, yes. You know, and that brings up a really good question for me, which is so many of the masters and so many of the people out there that I consider to be fairly evolved talk a great deal about how the number of channelings that are coming out today cannot be completely trusted.
Right.
One of the reasons for that is obvious, and that is that we're within a matrix, and you know, it doesn't stop just within walking the planet. You know, that matrix begins even before we're born, and
yeah,
it doesn't end even after we die. I mean, we're in a matrix fully, you know,
yeah,
before, after,
yeah,
during, whatever. And
absolutely,
that also includes when we're channeling. So I wanted to kind of ask you what is your opinion on that, and how does this sort of training allow you to expand your abilities and your psychicness as well, so that it is truly, really reaching source and getting beyond the matrix?
Okay, sure. There's a couple of answers here. Firstly, is to the delivery, if you will, the inspired delivery. Is all about positiveness and loving and so forth. And it has no answers to give, but mostly pointing, because other people have got to do that work for them. Often where you get channeling coming through and people are being directed and asked to do things and suggest this and it's like that and so forth. Because, as you mentioned, we're in a structure, a multi-dimensional layered structure. The Archon network is incredible. It's very extensive and very dense. And so one has to be aware of incarnate souls and so forth who are wanting to have a voice and come through. And so I think, yes, there is an awful lot of this happening because the veil is getting thin and a lot of channels are coming through. I feel that the best way is to really try to bring forward a very deep, deep soul wisdom. And in other words, the words that you use act like keys for people and open their consciousness. They might open a compartment in their consciousness, and it's sufficient that that's what they needed to be open for that particular time and no more. And so there's very, in fact, in that time and space of doing so, there's very little to be done. There's very little to be said, as it were. There's few words. The economy of words, I think, is very important here. If you're channeling your highest possible potential source or your greatest and most high esteemed inspirers. Because I think we're coming now into a time where it's self-empowerment, empower yourself begin to negotiate what you feel is right and wrong, and be exceedingly discerning in accepting what's being directed to you. Much better for the entity to come through to be more allowing the person to work it out for themselves.
Right. And I was going to say it's also an era of us becoming our own psychics and not having to go outside ourselves. You know, and that was another reason I felt drawn to this training, was to heighten whatever skills I already have. Because it's really important if we truly are the trailblazers, the light workers, which is such an overused term, but if we're the metaphysicists that are truly leading the so-called pack of life, we have some work to do with ourselves to, really tap in and expand that multidimensionality. I think the majority of us, we all agree we need to do it and we want to do it. It's just a question of how to do it efficiently, where it's not going to take 25 years to be sitting, in the perfect position with your legs crossed, doing a meditation for 3 hours. Yeah. We don't have time for that anymore.
No. And I think I addressed that other mode of meditation, which is what I call meditation indeed. Which is, if there's much to be done for meditation when you're cooking and when you're sitting on the loo, when you're brushing your teeth, whatever it is that you're doing just that. And we're so encouraged to multitask and do different things and, to begin to narrow down. Very simple. I mean, the wonderful thing, the interesting thing about a lot of the kind of esoteric wisdom schools drill down to some very common sense and basic delivery of information, and naturally so. Some of it is very profound, but it's couched in everyday terms and concepts. The idea that you have to sit down and be quiet, and that's gone now. That's the old way.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because it's an issue for many, because I had a client call me a couple days ago, and he said, it's just really bothering me that I really realize that I really get into that state.
Yeah.
Not when I'm sitting there trying to meditate, but when I'm in the shower.
Yeah.
And I said, well, good for you. I really so agree with the Matrix course. If you've listened to that, it's outstanding. And one ultimate thing I got out of that course is there are no rules in the universe. There are no rules. Who the hell created all these rules? Like, oh, the only way I can be spiritual is to go to 3 meetup groups a week. And I'm not saying anybody says that, but we have so many constructs around what creates us into a more spiritual person or a more together or more highly conscious, person or what have you. So I feel like people will like to hear the fact that you're not so, hey, you've got to meditate and you got to do it it's really hammered out there a lot, and people get discouraged.
You're totally right, and I'll say something now that some of your audiences will appreciate and others will be aghast against, is that at the end of the day and at the beginning of the day, creation is not judging you and it doesn't reward you either.
Very true.
This is the view that I'd be talking about, is that it just is. It really just is. And so on the just is layered all these kind of constructs and ideas and so forth. It's all very fun, very fashionable, et cetera, and so forth. But quite frankly, when you hit a point that your brain is flatlined and there is no thought, that is when suddenly your consciousness is moving exponentially fast beyond the speed of light.
Yeah.
It's moving in all directions and in that instant. And my gosh, you're pushing, you're now, all the constructs are now down. And now you're drawing in zeros and ones, information that is keying in with your consciousness, that is the food that you require, that the very elixir of your consciousness now is working for you, the very stuff that you need in that instant, in that moment, because it's where you are, and that's where you get that acceleration, not through reading books. Put the books down. They don't serve you. Experience is where truth is. That's primary. Yes, please read books. Good. I mean, I'm not saying don't read books, because there are places where people are in a stage of awakening and awareness that we're on a journey. We need to seek information.
Yes.
But ultimately, you'll end up putting them down.
That's really true. And so much of what we read, you know, especially for me, the blogging that I do, you know, I don't agree with everything that I put up there, but I do feel that the information is worthwhile because it's exactly what you said before. There are words, phrases, or key elements of information that are enough to trigger you to remember something.
Yeah.
Which literally opens a whole doorway of, wow, now I remember.
Yeah. And information does play its place in terms of, you know, its own aha moments. Like you read something and it resonates and you go, I knew that. Somehow that feels right. I understand that. We have to engage books and words and so forth.
Right.
I mean, naturally so. With the course going back, but what I'm doing is bringing it back to the walk and talk situation on the C5 in relation to becoming more aligned with our cosmic family.
Yeah,
is we'll leave those behind, and it's this is now an opportunity of advancing into a no mind state, and it's in that no mind state that you really bring in what your soul is needing. You know.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so one of the analogies of soul is beautiful. I've ran with for a long time. It's the world you look upon. So, you know, you have two people, they say, oh, look, what a wonderful, colorful sunset. Beautiful, amazing colors. Oh, astonishing. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it, you know, enchanting? And the other person standing next to you will say, well, so what? See one every day. So the world you look upon, you know, is an analogy of your soul.
It's a very good point. Very good.
Yeah.
I remember having that presented to me, but in a completely different way. Now,
right.
I think it's very interesting. Here I am once again interviewing you. And what happens while you say that? A hawk flies right by my window. And that's my animal totem.
It's, gotcha. Yeah. Oh, good.
So that was a good omen. Anyway, so tell me what your perception is of moving from an evaluator of sensory and intuitive information, like you were discussing, and being a true observer of that information. How does this training assist you in that way?
Okay, from evaluating to just
observing.
Yeah. Well, that's the answer. There is to. That's not easy to do. It's not easy to do. In fact, now you've reminded me, I can bring in an exercise in which one is moved to sense and feel things that are out there, but not necessarily evaluate them. For example, you find yourself, give yourself 2 hours, and you're just standing and staring and being drawn to a bird or a sound. And you move towards it and stand and stare again. There's nothing better you can do, old Taoist saying, than to stand and stare or stand and do nothing. So you're moving out of that kind of right brain, you know, evaluating.
Good. We have our work cut out for us, don't we?
Well, there's exactly. So, I mean, it's going to be, you know, we're going to have up to four hours in the workshop, 3.5-4 hours. We'll move out into the sky at Joshua Tree. It's going to be absolutely beautiful and wonderful there. It's a magical, magical place.
Yeah, they have 17 vortexes, Martin.
Yeah, I know.
17.
It's going to be astonishing. Yeah.
I know. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But now, here's a really good question for you, because I see it a lot in my business. And that is, I feel my heart goes out to many of these people that are really working for the light, whether it's a spiritual warrior or a light worker, indigo, whatever you want to call yourself, starseed, you name it. You know, I see this really escalating more so now than ever before, and that is people that are under psychic attack. Or they have learned some skills to diminish the psychic attack, but they're still feeling very thwarted at every level within their life. What would you say to them?
Let's see. Well, we need to look at some of the mechanics of attack, being on the receiving end of several over the last few years, some very, very strong ones. The first thing I would suggest is, and it would be for me to be able to bring in a lightheartedness and begin to start to activate the heart again, because the heart is a natural comforter and protector. Once the heart is fully activated, then you're streamlined into the rest of creation, because it's based on bliss or love, and then you have no issue there. So it's a case of feeling thwarted. These are the issues, aren't they? Being feeling
yes,
thwarted.
Yes.
This is a psychological patterning. And so one would have to address that psychological patterning, listen to the words being said, and in some cases reverse them, because words have their own energetic value. So there will be a case of asking people to be mindful of the words that they're using, and hearing too, because they're reprogramming themselves. As they speak, they hear, they reprogram. Speak,
right.
Hear, reprogram. So on the linguistic level of getting them out of the loop, would be a psychological loop, would be important.
Yeah.
On an energetic level, in terms of protection, there are some simple basic methods. One is visualizing gold only, not white, not white light. White light is very universal, but gold is the higher frequency, so.
And isn't that interesting that is what the whole entire community is typically taught?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Quite so. I mean, whether it's the black or the white arts, white light is used. You know, I mean, light is in all things.
Right.
Even the greatest, occultist of the dark side, they will use white light. You know, it's a universal energetic that's being used. But gold is another thing altogether.
It is. In so many ways.
Oh, yes, absolutely. For sure. And, you know, if you're wearing a little bit of gold, that's great, because you can see the gold. And then you will visualize yourself in a sphere. And that will help, periodically when you're feeling a little bit vulnerable. You could do that at night time before you go to bed. You can cover your entire bed in the golden sphere. You can call on the seventh dimension feline beings, who are very, very powerful. There's an issue of patching up some of the energy leaks as well, because the aura has been split. There may well be chakras are non-aligned, as it were. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of energy work that I'll be using could be used on a daily basis as well. So that's in terms of feeling vulnerable.
Well, that's great. I mean, and I know you're going to be going over all this, things such as protection and clearing. And, we're getting to the end of the hour, but one last thing is, I think, will this assist people in being able to process all the upheaval that's going on the planet more effectively?
I hope so. The idea is that when people come away, that they will be somewhere else where they weren't. And that is by no means down to me. In some extent, it'll be a trigger, but they'll be doing the work, and hopefully they will be able to say, in a week's time, when they come back and say, something has shifted. Yes, I feel this. Yes, it's all that. And hopefully that will be the benefit of the subtle training, that there has been a change and a shift. And it's always wonderful, wonderful to hear.
Right, right. Well, I once again thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming in at such a last minute. And as always, it's very enjoyable to talk to you, Martin. And I really want to let everybody know that the CE5 SERPR training is going to be next weekend, August 22nd through the 25th. In Joshua Tree. It will be a small group of us. We're not going to have like umpteen people because there will be a lot of one-on-one. He will be meeting you where you are in your evolutionary scale, as I say. And we've picked the perfect place, the Joshua Tree Retreat Center, because they have so many vortexes, and where you sleep will literally be minutes from where we will be doing the CE5 training and contacting our galactic brothers and sisters. So please contact either serper.org, that's CERPER.org, or you can also drop me a line at galacticconnection.com. And either way, one of us will get in touch with you and go over the whole application process and what's involved. But Martin is coming to the United States specifically to bring his very special, how do I say it? It's just kind of his very special trademark, his incredibly elucidating wisdom, and intertwining that with the connection with the galactics. And I just think it's something we all need and we all want, from everybody I speak to anyway. So, Martin, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we tie this up?
Those that are coming, if you can please look at the pre-CE5 and step by step make that step towards contact now. I am with you in that contact now, and see you there. It's going to always be my great pleasure to serve you, that's my directive, and let's have fun.
Okay, yeah, let's have fun. Hey, everybody knows that about me. You got to have some fun. Yeah. So listen, everybody, thank you so much for listening, and thank you all for supporting me and galacticconnection.com. I could not be here today without all you awesome people. So stay tuned for next week. I'm not really sure. You're not going to believe this, but I had a really cool interview set up for next week, and he has to go to jury duty. So we'll see what's going on for next week. But take care, everyone. God bless. Namaste, and I love you. Bye-bye. Thanks, Martin.
Oh, pleasure.